Support for this program provided by Girdwood, Alaska. Take a drive down the scenic highway past Beluga Point. Hike Bird Ridge and enjoy what Girdwood has to offer. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. In Anchorage, I'm Alyssa Yakadi London. When filmmaker Jeff Harisimowicz turned his camera on high school basketball players in remote Southeast Alaska, he didn't know what to expect. The result is a poignant, true story of tragedy and hope, passion, and perseverance. His film, Alaska Nets, is already winning accolades. We'll hear from Jeff coming up this hour, as well as some of the people from Metlakatla that are featured in the film. That's all coming up right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Oglala Sioux Tribal Council voted to change the language of an educational ordinance that required students to take online classes on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Richard Tubols reports.
The Tribes Law and Order Committee is meeting soon to discuss new protocol to hold schools accountable to follow their plans for safe practices regarding the pandemic for in-person learning in accordance with the new amendment. The previous iteration of the ordinance required students to go back to online learning. OST President Kevin Killer says the action they took last week to enact the ordinance reflected the increasing COVID-19 cases reservation-wide.
Learning and interaction that younger generation needs, we wanted to make sure that, you know, that wasn't interrupted as well. And so basically they took the action to last week to do virtual learning.
Red Cloud Indian School students protested the shelter mandate, claiming that online learning would hurt their education and impact their future. With the number of cases rising in the last month, the tribe decided to enter the red risk level of their COVID-19 response plan.
End result was, it was amended to amend the shelter in place that required in-person learning. It turned it actually to each school safety plan, you know, ensuring that they have the vaccinated students can come back and start doing in-person learning. And then the ones that aren't vaccinated, you know, whether, you know, that's their choice or not, they can continue to do online education.
OST Law and Order Committee will also look into updating the education ordinance language to reflect the current use of vaccines. In Rapid City, I'm Richard Tubols.
A tribal group opposed to South Dakota's proposed social study standards will keep pushing for tribal inclusion. This week, Governor Kristi Noem asked the state's Department of Education to delay implementing the standards for up to 1 year for more public input. The Native community says the standards perpetuate the erasure of Indigenous history and perspective. More than a dozen references of Lakota, Dakota, and Nakota people were taken out of the standards. Sarah White, Indian Collective Education Equity Director, says a long pause is not exactly a sign of relief.
This was another clear evasion of responsibility for Indigenous students, for inclusion, for anything of that nature.
White says what's happening in South Dakota is part of a broader and longstanding failure to teach Native American history in classrooms.
We haven't, as a nation, admitted or even faced the truth of what happened with Indigenous people.
In Montana, a lawsuit over Native American curriculum claims the state is violating a constitutional mandate. The U.S. Department of Justice has picked 12 tribes for a program to access and share crime data. KLCC's Brian Bull reports.
The Cow Creek Band of Umpqua Indians and the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation are the latest additions to what's called the Tribal Access Program, or TAP. Launched in 2015, TAP began in response to tribes' calls for more direct access to federal data systems, including those of the FBI. Cedar Wilkie Gillette is the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Coordinator for the District of Oregon. She says more tribes getting into TAP will aid local investigations.
Particularly when there is an active missing person case, that could be a very critical time for law enforcement to share information or just try to track that person down.
Another Oregon-based tribe, the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation, was chosen in 2016. Altogether, 108 federally recognized tribes were signed on with TAP. For National Native News, I'm Brian Bull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Support by the Sanoski Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Melissa London. Basketball and fishing are two of the main themes in the documentary film Alaska Nets. They are the central passions that thread through a story of heartbreak and hope on Alaska's only Native reservation of Metlakatla. The film is about a small school in a tight-knit community working hard to hold on to its language and cultural traditions. As in many other Native communities, high school basketball in Metlakatla is a serious pastime. The sport is a source of pride and accomplishment for players and spectators alike, and Alaska Nets catches a remarkable moment in time. We're hearing about the film today from the filmmaker and some of those who took part in it. And we'd like to hear from you, too. Give us a call right now at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, first, we're going to hear from some of the community members from Metlakatla, Alaska. We have Melody Leisk and her daughter, Naomi Leisk. Melody is the team grandma and a member of the Tsimshian tribe. And Naomi is the Annette Island School District's cultural educator and Tsimshian studies teacher, and is also Tsimshian. Melody and Naomi, welcome so much, welcome to the show. Very excited to have you here today. And Melody, can you start us off by telling us what basketball means to the community of Metlakatla?
Oh my gosh. First of all, it's an honor to be on your show to share our community of Metlakatla, Alaska. And, you know, Metlakatla, we have a real rich history in basketball, and it goes back for decades. And so it's the only thing that we really have in our community, you know, that we built on. And, you know, I think part of that has to do with our weather. You know, we have a lot of strong winds and a lot of rain. And so we developed the love of basketball because it's a nice indoor sport. And so we have a rich history behind basketball. So it's a really important part of our heritage, too. So, yeah.
For audience members that haven't been to Metlakatla, Alaska, can you give them a sense of where it is geographically in Alaska and also what it feels like to be in the gym on a night in which there is a basketball game?
Okay, so we are located at the southeast side of Alaska. We are actually closer to Seattle, Washington, than we are to Anchorage. And so we're at the, so if you're traveling to Alaska, the first city that you stop into is Ketchikan, Alaska, and we are located about 15 miles south of that there. So our temperatures are really mild. We get lots of rain. We are considered a rainforest. And when we do get snow, it doesn't stick around very long. So basketball here, This is something that this whole community looks forward to on the weekends, and we get behind our teams for the Miss Chiefs and the Chiefs basketball games. And not only that, we also have a little league that we get behind and help support and do fundraising for them too. So this is kind of like our hub, you know, like speaking of the different hubs, we have like an outdoor court that our youth play. They play at the outdoor court for our school district. And rain, sleet, snow, wind, freezing temperatures, that doesn't matter. You'll always find children, kids from 3 to 18 years of age, there playing until dusk. So, yeah, that's something we do here.
And speaking of children, Naomi, you have two sons. What was it like for them to watch the film, participate in the film? What was that like for your family?
It was exciting and really nerve-wracking, even though I knew the outcome and I knew that we won. Watching the film with them, I mean, you get to feel it. And there was some little bit of tears. Hopefully they aren't mad at me, but even a little bit of tears watching it.
Did it make you feel represented? Did it accurately portray how meaningful basketball is to your community? What were those tears a result of?
I think it did, because it showed a lot of like community and the origin of like basketball and how it became so important is like part of the roots of the All-Native Basketball Tournament came about when potlatches, like federal policies like the Indian Act, outlawed potlatches. And you can go to federal prison just for being at one, just for being who we are. And doing it has allowed us to not just survive, but to thrive for thousands and thousands of years. So basketball became our loophole. Basketball became a way to gather and have those kind of communal kind of aspects of our culture still kind of carried out. And like if you YouTube any kind of All Native tournament stuff, you can kind of see the opening ceremonies always have singing and dancing as a part of it. So I think it did. There was a lot of community all throughout the movie, which was pretty cool.
Given that you are Annette Island School District's cultural educator and Tsimshian studies teacher, can you talk to me more about how basketball is interwoven with Tsimshian culture?
I think it's just that community aspect. Tsimshian people are just like very communal and pulled together, not just during like the good times, but especially like during the hard and kind of like heavy times that you would see in the movie also. Just pulling together and working together and cooperating. Integrated, I guess.
Sounds like basketball teaches a lot of Tsimshian values through the...
Yeah, it could. Yeah.
Awesome. Melody, can you tell us more about how important the Metlakatla basketball team is to your community?
Oh my gosh. For one, it doesn't matter who steps on the court. We are one big family. So we're going to cheer on this family's child on the court. We're going to cheer on this family over here because, you know, there's a rich history behind all of the you know, what we considered legends of basketball, and we hear their names carried through history. And but you know, the most important thing is that we are very supportive of who steps on the court, you know. And so because they carry the name, you know, they're a huge family. And in Metlakatla, you know, they what I love about this movie dealing with the Alaska net, what they were able to capture with our bass ball in the community is that they captured our resilience and our unity as Tsimshian people. You know, it really shows that we are one big family, whether it be basketball or whatever, but in this particular, it was the basketball family. And so, I loved how Jeff's approach, when he entered into our community, his crew worked closely with our tribal council as they navigated their way into our story. And so, as with anything, you know, we at the end, we engaged in real lasting relationships, you know, and recreated forever relationships. And it goes with anybody that steps into our community. We have real lasting relationships when they leave Malakala, you know, and so I hope I help.
Well, it sounds like one of the most important part of the basketball culture of Metlakatla is the family environment that it creates. And it says here in my show notes that you are the team grandma. So what does that mean to you?
In our small community, we all pull together and we're very supportive. And when it comes to fundraisers or, you know, we're quick to pull together to do any kind of fundraising for new uniforms or, you know, the championship ring or, you know, whatever. One of the things that we did, it's kind of a traditional, it's traditional in our family, starting from my mother, Ruth Booth, and my father, Mal Booth. We always rolled out the red cedar carpet if you're coming into our community. And so we always, you know, created meals to spread on our table to share part of our culture, part of our heritage, and this is our traditional foods. We will always have a place on the table for you. And so what we did for the basketball season, when our grandson Tyler and Isaac were on the team, we had our sleeves all rolled up. And as a grandma, I worked with their great-grandmother, Ruth, and we set up our kitchen, we prepare all the meals, and we would invite the team once a week, you know, to come sit at the table.
It sounds wonderful and very communal, and the way that basketball brings everyone together in Metlakatla sounds amazing, and we're going to hear more about that after the break from all of our guests. This is Native America Calling, and we'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. This year marks the 50th anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, or ANCSA. It was an innovative approach at the time that set the stage for land stewardship and capitalism mixed with Native values. It also set the stage for Alaska Native governance and identity in the state ever since. We'll get a glimpse of the strengths and drawbacks of ANCSA at 50 on the next Native America Calling.
Too many do not have access to affordable high-speed internet. That's why AARP fought for the Emergency Broadband Benefit, a federal program to help lower the cost of high-speed internet for eligible households. Those who may have experienced financial setbacks during the pandemic or are struggling to get by may be eligible for a discount of up to $50 per month for high-speed internet or up to $75 per month for households on tribal lands. Info at aarp.org/EBB. AARP supports this show.
You're listening to Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London. And we're talking about basketball today, specifically about high school basketball in the southeast Alaskan town of Metlakatla. It's a setting for a documentary film, Alaska Nets, and you can join our conversation by calling in at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, before the break, we were speaking with Melody Leisk and her daughter, Naomi Leisk, from Metlakatla, Alaska. And they were sharing with us about how much basketball brings the community together and how some Sheehan values are infused in just the way that the community comes together in, around basketball and how important it is to everybody. Now, the filmmaker behind Alaska Nets is the individual I want to bring into our conversation now. He's joining us from Bend, Oregon, and his name is Jeff Harisimowicz, and he's the director and producer of the film Alaska Nets. Welcome to Native America Calling, Jeff.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Thank you. Well, from what I've heard so far is that the community was very happy with how you put together the film with your team. You must be very proud.
Yes, very proud, but definitely that was by far the most kind of nerve-wracking part of the process was kind of earning their trust and truly earning it, not just, you know, taking it, but really earning it, working with them. And then, yeah, I think the most scared I've probably ever been in my life was showing them the movie after working on it for 4 years and then really hoping they'd like it.
I bet. And now that you have shown it to them and had time to reflect on the journey of creating the film, what are some of the things you're specifically most proud about that you'd want people to focus on if they watch your film?
I mean, the thing I'm most proud about is just how the community has seemed to respond to it. I think it was really important to tell their story honestly and sincerely, and that was the highs and the lows. And I honestly didn't really know the depth of the story that I was walking into. You know, I was thinking basketball, it's going to be a sports story, but it really became much more of a human story. And again, that comes with some really high highs and some very low lows. And I don't think I was fully prepared for kind of that spectrum of emotion. So being able to capture that authentically and capture that in a way that the community seemed to be really proud of, that was the thing that makes me kind of the happiest in the whole process. So I certainly hope that when people watch the film, they feel that, you know, the passion the community has for their sport, for their community, for their tradition. And then, yeah, hopefully it inspires anyone who watches it in a time where I think all of us could use a little inspiration.
Love that. Now, reflecting back to how this all started, what caused you to come across the community of Metlakatla and the basketball culture that is so prevalent there?
Yeah, I stumbled across a photo essay about Metlakatla and was kind of just floored by it, the fact that I had no idea that there was only kind of one Native reserve in Alaska. I thought there were many, and I, of course, know there are many Native communities, but I was kind of surprised that there was only one Native reserve. I was also surprised that the kids in high school were commercial fishermen, and that starts at a very early age. That was surprising to me. And then kind of the third part of that is the fact that basketball, of all sports, is so popular in Alaska was equally as surprising. I think so many people from down south, myself included, guilty as charged. You think of Alaska, you think of all the stereotypes of Eskimos, igloos, sled dogs. And while, of course, that does exist, you know, there's an entirely different world up there. And basketball is so ingrained, not only in Metlakatla, but throughout the state. So when I came across the story, I was fascinated by it. And, you know, TJ, Coach Scott, happened to be documented in kind of that photo essay. And so I got his contact information and to send him an email, just cold calling, asking if anyone had told the story before. And I think when I had actually emailed him, he was in the process of losing the state championship the year prior to us documenting them. So I don't think he was in the best of moods. But ultimately, he got back to me, invited me up to Metlakatla, and that kind of began the journey of meeting the community, getting introduced to the story, and ultimately deciding to kind of go on this journey with them.
What are some of the things that you learned about filmmaking or community-based filmmaking that you would like other filmmakers to know and bring into their own projects?
I think it all really just revolves around sincerity. I know myself. I know kind of what I was hoping to bring to the project. I think, honestly, when I walked into the community, my intention was to kind of be a fly on the wall and be very removed from the process, at least the emotional part of it. I just wanted to document, kind of, you know, hands off. But once I got to Metlakatla, I realized that approach probably wouldn't work, I think in part because of just who I am as a person, but definitely because of who they are as a community. They're not the kind of people who will keep you at arm's length if they like you, you're going to get pulled in very quickly. And I think everyone you'll hear on today's call has invited me over for meals at their house. And I've probably had multiple meals at everyone's house here and many other community members too. So I think, you know, trust is a huge thing. Earning that trust, maintaining that trust, and just realizing that it is about relationships. These aren't just people you're photographing and running away from. These are people who you are documenting and showing the best part of their lives and at times the worst part of their lives. And it really does require a level of trust and sincerity that you can't fake. And so I think if you have a good heart, filmmaking might be for you, but you know, you really got to kind of open yourself up to everything that could happen and just be prepared to go on the journey wherever it takes you.
Thank you. We also have on the call today, joining us from Metlakatla, Alaska, TJ Scott. He is a high school math, health, and PE teacher and coach for the Metlakatla High School Chiefs boys basketball team. Welcome to Native America Calling, Coach Scott.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Thank you for being here. So Jeff said that he reached out and just wanted to see if he could tell the story of your team. What was that first conversation like?
Well, it was unnerving because you have to think about the process and then how you're going to be portrayed in a film that's obviously going to be seen by a lot of people. And so that's a little scary. And, you know, especially myself, I think about as a coach, I build a relationship with the kids. I love the kids to death, as you see in the movie, but I'm also very intense at times. And you just, you know, you do worry about the one thing that you might say that might not go over really well. So that was a big thought process that went into it. And obviously talking to my wife and, well, fiance at the time, but wife now, and just seeing what she thought of the process. And she kind of put the whatever you think is best behind it. And so then I had a conversation, you know, a good conversation with Jeff, and then I got to meet him. And at that point in time, I felt like he was in it for the right reasons and that, you know, it was worth taking a shot.
What were some of the things that he said that you could tell were going to cause the outcome of filming to result in a positive depiction of Metlakatla basketball?
I think that that just being here for, because this was obviously not my first year here. I think this was my sixth year as head coach and being here in the community, and living here and seeing, you know, how people treat me as one of their own, and seeing how the kids are and the kids react to outside influences and people coming in. Obviously just being here and seeing and knowing how great the people are, that I felt like it couldn't really go poorly. So I think that was just my thought process behind it. You know, if they just showed what really happens here, that it's going to be positive.
And what are some of the parts of the film that you're most proud about?
Well, there's a ton of things to be proud of with that film. I think just where the growth the team made throughout the year, and the constant challenges of kind of coming together as a team with a lot of personality differences on the team and a lot of fiery attitudes but good kids that, you know, just don't mesh well at times, and then just bringing everyone together you know, throughout, over and over throughout the film, to kind of reach a common goal. That would be the thing I'm the most proud of, because that season could have derailed many times and almost did a few times. And just to see them fight back and come together and, you know, put team above themselves and put the community above themselves was something I'm extremely proud of.
We have a caller. Her name is Donna. She's calling in from Wasilla, Alaska, and listening in on KNBA. Donna, do you have a question or comment for our guests?
I just have a comment. I lived in four different villages here in Alaska, and basketball was a central part of socialization and everybody getting together and having a good time. And you're all nice and warm, you know, huddled together in blizzard conditions, you know. So, and I was commenting that I lived in my apartment, and it was overlooking an outdoor playing basketball, you know, this wood floor. And I'd look out there at midnight, and there would be the kids just dribbling away. And, oh, they just love basketball. So it just... really brought people up, you know, and it was a really good thing to have basketball in the villages, and cooperation was really emphasized rather than competition. So, you know, if somebody was playing another team, they'd always really very sincerely congratulate the winner, you know. And it was really good seeing that was more important than competition. So that's a native, to me, that's a native value.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you for pointing out how important basketball is throughout Alaska, rural Alaska, and in native communities. Naomi, can you build on that? What does basketball mean to your family and your two sons?
I was going to go off of what she just said, too, what I said earlier. There's a component of cooperation, which is a traditional value, and then there's that communal aspect of it also. And then on my dad's side of my family, a lot of them played at SJ and actually all over the place, too, university level. And I guess back then the equivalent of, there's this really cool picture. It was printed in the newspaper, the famous Lease Basketball Family, and it listed all the different places they want to have to go play basketball. And so it's always been a part of my family for as long as I can remember.
It sounds like it's been a big part of your family and Metlakatla at large. Coach Scott, what is it like to lead the charge for, something that's so culturally important to the entire community?
Well, it's exciting, but it's also a lot of anxiety and a lot of nerves every day. You know, you want to put forth, you know, take these kids that love the game and put a lot of time and effort in the off season. You want to show the community something that they can be proud of. And so, you know, a lot of sleepless nights, a lot of thinking about, how you're going to play the next day and leading up to the game. But I think once the game tips off and it starts going, you know, kind of every, just like anybody that competes, once the game starts, it's game on and you kind of can just get into the flow of it and not worry about all the outside stuff until afterwards. But definitely some nerves.
Bet there's some nerves, but you've been doing very well and showed a great culmination of a hard-fought season in the film. Melody, what was it like hosting some of the meals for the crew and for the basketball team?
Well, the crew just became family. You know, we always have room at the table in Ruth's kitchen. And so it was an honor. It was a total honor, you know, to be involved, to stay involved with your family. And then your family is the community, you know. And so we know everyone here, and we know their personal struggles, and we know their personal success in their life stories, you know. And so just to reach out, just to bring them to the table, just so that they can just sit down and be in the moment, you know, and not think about anything else, because there's so much on their minds, you know, whether it be they're a student for basketball, or, you know, a lot of them are on fishing boats already. Some of them are divers, you know. This was a total honor for us to just to spread the table, have them kick their shoes off, come to the table, relax, you know. And so I love that part. I just love being involved with our youth, not only our children and our grandchildren, but, you know, but to create a space for anybody else's youth. I think that's our native traditional way, you know. And so it's been a total honor.
It sounds like you provided an open door for the community to gather, and that you created an extended family with the crew. And Jeff, how did that feel to be a part of that extended family and have meals and just get to know everybody?
It was incredible. And honestly, that's probably the most lasting part of this project, no matter how big and far it goes and gets. Like, that will be the most valuable thing to me, is the relationships. And it may sound cliche, but it is. Like, that is super incredible and super valuable. And just becoming part of the community and feeling it and believing it was super special. And I remember there's a scene in the film, you know, where we were eating with Melody and the team at her house, but we were also filming. And it's kind of this moment in the season where things are not going super well, kind of off the court, in terms of tragedy in the community. And there's kind of this tension between some of the players and, you know, what's going to happen. And I think really Melody and Ruth and Naomi's home really becomes this kind of reset for the community and for the team of, well, where are we going to go from here? And then she even sits down with the players and says, like, this is it, you're going to do it. And then that really became a rallying cry, I think, not only for the kids in the community, but for us as a crew too, of like, okay, we're going on this journey together. So yeah, becoming part of the community was an incredible experience, and definitely, as Melody said, lifelong relationships for sure.
And how are you maintaining those relationships? Is there any plans to continue to integrate the community in any of your projects?
I would love to. I think one of the comments we got a couple times was like, you know, how come you didn't follow the girls' basketball team, which I completely understand from the, you know, the question of it. You know, to answer that, really just from a storytelling perspective, it's hard to spread a story so thin just from a character perspective of following players, following a team, and following goals. But I think, you know, a couple people said, well, maybe you should come back in, you know, a decade or two and just do the girls team. Or, you know, maybe we come back again when Danny and DJ and Tyler and Isaac have kids, and maybe we're doing, you know, an Alaskan Nets too with their kids trying to run it back. So, you know, I think whether it's professional or certainly personal, I think, you know, my relationships with Metlakatla will continue, and I hope until, you know, the end of my life, which I hope is many, many years from now.
Well, we look forward to those future projects, and everyone who hasn't watched Alaska Nets, I hope they'll have an opportunity once it becomes available to the public. This is Native America Calling, and we'd love to hear from you today. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. You can also reach out on Facebook at Native America Calling or on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. We'll get your comments on the air. You can also interact with us on Instagram and Facebook at Native America Calling and tag me, Alyssa K. London. We have to take a short break, but we're going to hear more from our guests about Alaska Nets and Metlakatla basketball after the break. We'll be right back.
Are you a Native American entrepreneur? Have a business solution for an issue like racial equity or critical infrastructure? The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program is a federal program helping private lenders make the business loan you need. They support most businesses, whether starting up or expanding. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Division of Capital Investment supports this show.
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Alyssa London. There's still time to join our discussion. What does basketball mean to you and your community? Is it an important part of your life? Tell us at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, on the call today, we are learning about how important basketball is to Alaska, Alaska Native communities, rural Alaska, and most specifically, the community of Metlakatla. And on our call, we have the director, producer, and filmmaker of Alaska Nets, Jeff Harisimowicz. And we also have the basketball coach for the Metlakatla High School Chiefs boys basketball team, TJ Scott. We have the team grandma, Melody Leisk, and her daughter, Naomi Leisk, Annette Island School District's cultural educator and Tsimshian studies teacher. And we also have Chelsea Martinez. She's also calling in from Metlakatla, Alaska, and she's the secondary school counselor at Annette Island School District. Welcome to Native America Calling, Chelsea.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thank you. So how do you see basketball changing the behaviors and attitudes of athletes, and why is it so important to your students?
I feel like daily with every student, I'm always looking for, like, what is that carrot that is going to keep them engaged, keep them wanting to come the next day, keeping them wanting to abide by attendance policies. And for us here in Metlakatla, getting engaged in an after school program or something, or club, whatever that is, incentive is to travel, that's a huge piece to the carrot. And so basketball, for our young guys is is a useful carrot.
One of the tensions throughout the story was between how people wanted to go and fish, but then they also knew they needed to go to school, but then there was also, you know, basketball commitments. How do you help the students navigate all of those competing interests that they have?
Well, physical planners are not really useful. So we'll try like a ton of different techniques, just communicating, having relationships with people that they're supposed to check in with, right? And I would always use the example, because they would say, oh man, you want me here at 8 o'clock? And I'm like, yeah, but your attendance for meeting your captain at the boat or being the captain of your boat at 3 a.m. is not an issue. So it really is just like maintaining a relationship, making sure that people feel like their time is valued and that there's some accountability. We've actually had some attendance policies changed. And that was that now it's students have 15 days to miss excused or unexcused within a semester. And we had followed that policy off of other Southeast schools. So it wouldn't matter if it was fishing or vacation or whatever. It was up to the parents to be able to kind of navigate that with their students to getting 100% of the work done. If they miss 16, they meet with a committee, present kind of how they're still also a student athlete or a student fisherman. And so it's just constantly working with the student, working with the family, and getting their goals met.
The documentary shows how important fishing is to the community of Metlakatla and also how important basketball is. Can you talk about also the fishing component and how that even integrates with culturally Tsimshian values, but also with the importance of that basketball has in the Metlakatla community? Can you talk? I know your husband's a fisherman. Can you talk more about how important fishing is to the community?
I think it goes back to kind of what everyone's saying, that ability to gather, the ability to provide. And it's just such a huge resource here. And it goes down from like, one of my favorite things about my first year here in Metlakatla was students saying my great, great grandpa or grandfather. And I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even know who my great, great, you know? And so it encouraged, and that they have that, just the lineage of fishing. It's not just, it didn't just happen. Like it literally was established as a way of life.
And basketball has that lineage too, right?
Yep.
Yeah. It all goes together, is important. But the fishing and the diving, that was some of the sources of tragedy in the film. So what did it take for the school and the community to heal from that?
Coming together, we continue to host events where people are around each other, where we can physically see how someone's doing, right? We can have that touch, that connection to check in. It's probably been the literal hardest thing of COVID. Like I was just sharing with someone else that we used to have Taquan Hoopers, and that's when I'd be able to see like, oh, look, so-and-so has a new baby or whatever. You know, someone just saw my son and they were like, how is he this big? Because we're starting to get those pieces back.
Starting to get to the pieces back of gathering and coming together.
Yep. And it's a huge part of healing.
Huge part of healing. We also have Coach Derek from Ukiavik, Alaska, listening in on KBRW. Coach Derek, do you have a comment or a question for our guests?
Yes. I would just like to just state that I think basketball is so important, not only to the kids, but to the whole community. You know, to the families. You know, it's not only in Utqiagvik, but across the whole North Slope of Alaska. I grew up with my parents playing basketball, you know, and we grew up watching our Barrow toilet basketball team as we were growing up, and now I'm honored to be the head coach for the Barrow Lady Whirlers girls basketball team, and the support we get from our parents and our community and our different entities within Metcalfe is amazing. You know, we work hard. Our kids have code of conduct rules, you know, that the kids have to follow. You know, we check everything at the door, be ready to learn, give 100%, you know, focus on, you know, like on how to make the team better during that practice time, and they learn accountability. You know, they, you know, it's just a level of support we get from our community is amazing during our fundraisers. You know, we try and go on summer trips to improve on our development, and we have such strong support. You know, and I just want to thank you for having this on your program. Today, also, we laid to rest one of our strongest supporters, Roy Maloney Narell, and he was such a strong supporter for our kids program here in Metcalfe, and I just want to give a you know prayers to their family, you know, and I just want to thank the community and all the, you know, different entities within Metcalfe and even in the state of Alaska when our Barrow World Basketball program goes to state, you know, we have such a strong following. You know, there are times when we pack the building at the Alaska Airlines Center, you know, so I just want to, you know, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak on this.
Thank you,
we really love basketball here in Metcalfe, Alaska, and our Barrow Lady Whirlers basketball and our Barrow Whirler program.
Well, thank you, Coach Derek. I really appreciate you sharing your passion for basketball in Ukiavik. And Coach Scott, can you talk to us about what it's like when you go and travel with your team and when you play against other communities?
Well, the travel here is obviously crazy compared to down south, what we call down south, the 48. But so I think that's the biggest adjustment and the biggest actually blessing that we have up here is, you know, I coached in, you know, Eastern Washington, and, you know, a normal trip would be to get on a bus at 3:30 and travel an hour and get to the other school, watch the game in front of you, get dressed at halftime, go play a game, get on a bus, go home. Here, obviously, when we go play, for example, Haynes, which is a team in our league, we're taking a ferry on Thursday and then an Alaska Airlines flight to Juneau on Thursday night, stay the night in a school, and then get up the next morning at 5 a.m., catch the ferry that leaves at 6:30, take a 6-7 hour ferry to Haynes, get off the boat, check in, get into a school room, get your air mattresses set up, talk about the game plan a little bit, maybe watch a little film, and then go play that night, play the next night, and then do it all over again to get back to Metlakatla. So you're talking about a 5-day trip to play two games. So it just, you know, the time that you spend with your kids and being able to build those relationships and instill values that hopefully will help carry them through life. Just the opportunity is a lot greater, but it's also a lot more of a time commitment, you know, taking away from your own family. So
yeah, it's much more involved than in the lower 48. Chelsea, Coach Derek from Ukiavik talked about how basketball has a code of conduct and it holds the students to different standards. Can you talk about that aspect of the basketball culture in your community and how that helps your students perform in school as well?
Yeah, it's just extremely helpful. Going back to the idea of finding a carrot for every student. So what is going to be a reason to get them in the seat? What is going to be a reason for them to be respectful? So everyone has, we have a general handbook, right? And then we have an athlete's handbook. And TJ does a great job of establishing relationships with his players. And so, and he lets the teachers know beforehand, hey, can you let me know if there are behavior stuff going on? I want to be supportive. I want to check in with them. And it has had, we've had some tough conversations trying to keep athletes to that level of what we're asking of them. But it's also, I feel like it's created situations where we can have deeper relationships with students. So it's very, very useful. When we, again, like going to COVID when we couldn't have anything, it was really, really difficult to find ways to keep student athletes engaged.
Sounds like basketball becomes the foundation for setting kids up for success throughout the community. Jeff, something that Coach Derek said that I thought that spurred this thought was, in your film, you depicted the rivalry game with Ketchikan. Can you talk about what filming that was like? I mean, it seemed very exciting. The rivalry with Ketchikan, they're right across the channel. Can you talk about that experience?
Yeah, I had heard about the Ketchikan rivalry for quite a while. I think, you know, certainly talking to the old timers, as they would call themselves, you know, that's a rivalry that goes back generations, and it's super competitive. I think friendly for the most part, but again, super competitive and a lot of pride in that. You know, Ketchikan is a much larger community numbers wise than Metlakatla, but it's been a fairly competitive rivalry over time, which is funny. You think, like, in any sport, you're looking for those David and Goliath upsets, and anytime a small school can challenge a bigger school, there's always an extra level of buzz and excitement there. So, yeah, it was super exciting. And I think, honestly, anytime you'd see any of these schools play each other, it was just a cool reason to celebrate. Because I think, as you know, I think someone mentioned earlier, there's a socialization level that comes with it. And, like, you know, Danny and DJ and all these kids, like, they're friends with many of the kids in Ketchikan. They're friends with many of the kids in Petersburg and Haynes and even beyond. I think there's just probably the reason why these rivalries are so exciting is because your dad played against them, your grandfather played against them, your great-grandfather played against them, and it's just kind of carried on throughout time. So I think it just means more because it is more.
Yeah, and then the photos last forever. I mean, you can't walk through my uncle's house in Ketchikan without looking at all of the basketball photos. It becomes a shrine. I need to ask you, Alaska Nets premiered at Santa Barbara Film Festival. Where and when is it available to the public?
We have some news we can't share yet. It's not public, but this winter I can kind of foreshadow there'll be a really cool opportunity for a few months. Again, I can't say anything about it just yet, but basically anyone who's listening here or anyone who wants to see the film, there will be a chance to bring the film to your community, to your school. So kind of just be on the lookout for updates on that. Certainly follow the Facebook and Instagram pages at Alaska Nets, and we'll give you updates there. And then this spring, the movie will kind of come out and be available kind of far and wide, but really mostly excited about this development that's coming this kind of basketball season to bring the film to communities all over the country.
Thank you. And I hope that when people see your film, they realize how much Tsimshian values are infused into the basketball culture and just how important basketball is to Alaska Native communities and particularly to the community of Metlakatla. Want to thank you, say thank you to all of our guests. We had Jeff Harisimowicz. We had Coach TJ Scott. We had Team Grandma Melody Leisk and her daughter Naomi Leisk and school counselor Chelsea Martinez. That's all the time we have for today's show. I'm back again on Monday for the first of a two-part look at the 50-year anniversary of the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Our associate producer is Andy Murphy. Marino Spencer is the engineer. Nola Davis-Moses is the distribution director. And Bob Peterson is the network manager for Native Voice One. Clifton Chadwick is our national underwriting sales director. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor for National Native News. Charles Sather is our chief of operations. And the president and CEO of Quantic Broadcast Corporation is Jacqueline Salee. I'm your host, Alyssa London. And this is Native America Calling. Have a wonderful weekend.
The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community, and urge you to please contact your tribal or urban clinic to get your COVID-19 vaccination if you haven't already. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show. Program support by Amerind. For 35 years, Indian Country has put its trust in Amerind, providing insurance coverage, strengthening Native American communities, protecting tribal sovereignty, and keeping dollars in Indian Country are Amerind's priorities. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto needs at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Quantic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.